All right, I'm gonna open a delicious Budweiser here.
I'm very jealous. It's like 9 in the morning. I mean, I could do it, but considering I've got to go to a wedding later, probably wouldn't be great form to rock up to the wedding wildly drunk.
I thought that was a requirement in Australia.
Yeah. Isn't that how it's supposed to go? Don't you guys wake up, flick off the spiders, and then start drinking? I thought that's how it works.
That's it. You flick the spiders off, grab the snake by its throat, kill the crocodile, and then skull 6-pack of Fosters.
Nobody drinks Fosters in Australia, from what I've heard.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a bad rap. It's actually a pretty good beer. It's a bit sad, really, because in Australia, people don't drink it, but it's actually a pretty good beer. And I think if more people actually gave it a shot, they actually probably wouldn't mind it. And when I say good beer, for the cheap sort of just average beers, it's fine, right? It serves its purpose.
Oh, yeah. Nothing wrong with cheap beer. I dig it.
Yes. All right.
You want to get into this?
Go for it, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Welcome to the Judas Priest cast. Today we've got Jay here. Hi, Jay.
Hola.
And we have a very special guest. He's a time traveler. He's calling us from tomorrow. He's Metal Twitter's favorite Antipodean. Daniel Ricciardo was his best man at the wedding. He's so metal, he has a gimpy tree in his garden, and he has a pet drop bear. All right. And your name comes from a cricket ground. Punt Road, welcome to the Judas Priest cast.
G'day, how you going? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
you're a stalwart of metal Twitter. It's nice to have to talk to you in a phone setting, as opposed to just interacting with you on Twitter. You were one of the first people that actually welcomed me to metal Twitter, and I'm very appreciative.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's one of the best things about this podcast is meeting all my mutuals, because I've only been on Twitter a short amount of time. So that's one of the best things, and you are one of the best ones, man.
Well, thank you very much. It's such an awesome community. It's everyone's so friendly and so nice and welcoming and so knowledgeable as well. I think I've learnt more on metal Twitter and my time on there than I probably did in my entire metal upbringing pre-internet.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I've learned a lot. I still don't know as much as I should. And, you know, fake it till you make it. Start a podcast. What the hell? I mean, jump in the pool, man. But, yeah, people are so knowledgeable and accepting and fun. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I think it's a fantastic community. And, I mean, I know we're talking, obviously, about Judas Priest, obviously. And I was going to touch on something later on, but I'll just bring it up now. You know, the metal community is so accepting. Rob Halford, obviously, if you didn't notice in the 80s, wearing his leather and his studs and everything, he's gay. Not a single person in the metal community batted an eyelid. That's my perception anyway. Like, who cares? Yeah. It's all about the music. It's all about bringing people together. So I love being on Twitter, and I love metal, and it's so glad that you guys have got the passion to do this and have me on here to talk about it. Really appreciate it.
Oh, we'd love to have you. And yeah, I don't think Rob's sexual preference was a big secret anyway, but yeah, you never know. You see that parking lot thing with that one movie, what's it called? God, the name escapes me now. The Heavy Metal Parking Lot or whatever. They have in the 80s, they have all these dressed to the nines, heavy metal chicks saying, "Oh, I want to jump Rob's bones," and all that.
Good luck.
Yeah, so Punt, you have a YouTube channel you just started.
I do, yeah. So, I mean, the long story short is I'm an unemployed bum at the moment. So I was in a job for a long period of time and decided to accept a redundancy. And I thought, instead of sitting on my backside and eating Doritos and watching sport, I would go and try and do something good with my life. And I thought I'd set up a YouTube channel. So yeah, it's, if anyone's interested, it's Punt Road Vids, capital P, capital R, capital V. And it's been really great, just sort of reviewing, just doing short mini reviews of albums, songs, recording some of my stuff on the guitar and putting up their different takes on songs, making my own songs up, really just trying to do what we do on Twitter, but in a bit more of a visual format. So head out to the Aussie bush, try and avoid the drop bears and snakes and the killer crocodiles and everything else. But yeah, look, it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, if anyone wants to come and join us on that, I'd love to have them.
Yeah, it's great too. It's always one of the last ones I saw. You're actually driving in the car and your son Axel was filming, so that was cool. you're everywhere.
Yeah, we had the dads and kids camp and we drove along and I said, oh, here, just you do the filming for me, the killer cameraman Axel. So he's, you know, and very lucky with my kids. They both love music. I actually asked them before this, I said, what's your favorite Judas Priest song? And I said to firstly my daughter, and I said, but she goes, I don't know the name of it. So I played her a few songs. She goes, that one. So Electric Eye. There you go. That was
good
a,
choice.
That was
a wow. She has great taste.
Yeah. That was Allegra's favorite. Axel's a big Grinder fan from day one, and he's asked his teacher to get how to learn that in the guitar, which is an easy one. So we've been very safe hands with the next generation of metal lovers. So.
Father of the year right here, man.
Yeah, I don't know if his school thinks the same thing, but
so Axel's picking up the axe.
Yes, boob tish. Yeah, he has. He's picked up the guitar like his old man. He's loving it so far. He's learning sort of as much as he can. I think his first song he learned was Iron Man, which is about as classic, I suppose, as you get, another Birmingham band.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's really enjoyed that. He's very keen to get some Megadeth under his belt. He's got a bit of Metallica in there. Some suicidal tendencies as well, and obviously the mighty Judas Priest. So, yeah, it's really, really happy to see him do that. I'm hoping to get, like, a little family troupe going on because my daughter's quite a good singer. She's in the choir at school.
Nice.
Sort of trying to build her confidence up. Axel's got more confidence than you know what to do with, so he could probably drag both of them along, but she's a very good singer. They had their floorball grand final, which is like indoor ice hockey, and they won. He scored the winning goal with 8 seconds
yes.
to go. That was yesterday. And then he gave it the medal salute. And
yeah.
He was like Ronnie James Dio on the floorball court.
That's beautiful, man.
Proud father. Proud father.
Oh, yeah, you should be. Totally. So what got you into guitar?
Well, a number of things. I mean, firstly, music in general is probably, I had an older brother who's 4 years older than me, who had his 50th birthday just the other day. He didn't play guitar, but he did play heaps of heavy music. And he gave me my first metal album, which was a 90-minute tape with Ride the Lightning on one side and Garage Days, the original Garage Days on the other.
Wow.
So that was a huge thing. My dad was massively into music, and in fact, you can just sort of see off to the side there. So for the people who are listening on the podcast, you can't, but behind me is all my dad's old reel-to-reel equipment and record equipment and stuff.
Oh, nice.
My dearly departed father, God bless, he gave me all his stuff, including like original Sergeant Pepper's reel-to-reel. I've got Edison phonograph with the original like 1909 cylinders that you put in and all this sort of stuff. He collected
wow.
Yeah, so he had a... He had like Deep Purple and stuff like that growing up, as well as all the 50s and 60s stuff. So we had a massive musical education. So when I got to the point where I thought maybe I can make my own stuff or at least learn how to play these guys, I was sort of well on the way. So then obviously heard bands, they mentioned Metallica, Megadeth, Judas Priest, Black Sabbath, and thought, well, hey, let's give it a go. So I did. My parents didn't think I was taking it particularly seriously at first. So they bought me the worst guitar ever, a Ranger, hang on, I've still got it there, a Ranger ST73 or something, which is made out of balsa wood. And the moment you play a single chord, it automatically detunes itself. So probably great for new metal, no one would ever notice. But not great for trying to be Glenn Tipton or anything. And then just kept practicing there, was in a few bands and whatever else. But then through work, you travel around. So then it just became something I did every single day and still due to this point, and it's rubbed off on my children, which is good. And it's been great to be able to play a few songs on Twitter, because otherwise I'd just be in my bedroom doing it by myself. So to be able to put that up there, it's been really good. So yeah, I think when I was a kid, I dreamed of one day being Dave Mustaine. And then when I found out more about Dave Mustaine, I just dreamed of being as good a guitar player as him.
So have you achieved that? Are we going to see you on the stage anytime soon?
I don't think so, but you might see me on the on the YouTube videos. But yeah, it's really, I would suggest to anyone to play an instrument. I play bass and Irish tin whistle from a trip to Ireland, learned how to play that, and I did music at school, so I really enjoy it. It's just a good, fun stress release.
Well, that's awesome. You had music in the house growing up. That helps quite a bit.
Yeah. And
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, for Australian people, like, I mean, maybe the Americans don't know so much, but there was a guy called John Farnham, who was a famous singer in Australia. My dad recorded him in the garage when he was living in Melbourne. Took my brother to see AC/DC at the local shopping centre at the mall in 1974 or something when he was about 6 months old. So
wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of – so there was always music being played constantly in the house. And my dad actually was kind of a bit like YouTube or streaming before that, because he was this great believer in, like, the riff or the short, interesting part of the song was the best bit. So he would make these tapes, and he'd have – my mum would organise these lavish dinner parties, and these people would come round, and then he would have these tapes, and they would have 35 seconds or 40 seconds of a song. And people would just get into it. He's like, yeah, that's boring now. And it would automatically click on to the next song, which some people were very frustrated. But he did manage to get in Sabbath, Metallica at a dinner party. And then interspliced with there was Conway Twitty and, other Manfred Mann and other crazy bands. So, yeah, it was a great musical education.
Nice. So you mentioned a lot of bands initially when we started talking, Megadeth, Metallica, Judas Priest. But, you know, what with the AC/DC, are they as big in Australia as they are worldwide? Is it something when, you know, you grow up, you need to like AC/DC? You should like AC/DC. Or yes. Is it anything like that? Or?
I think when you're born, that they do have a little machine and they run it on your forehead. And if it doesn't say, I like AC/DC, then they chuck you. They chuck you to New Zealand. They send you in a boat to New Zealand. No, they don't really. No, it is... AC/DC are absolutely massive here, obviously. People just love them. They're an institution. And they were, obviously very big on the pub scene before they became big globally. So they've got a massive following, particularly over east. In Western Australia, I'm from, Bon Scott lived in Fremantle for a long period of time. And there's a big statue of him, which my kids, every year we go down there and we have fish and chips by the sea. And then I take a photo of them. So I'm hoping to do that sort of year on year as they get older. Nice. So he's massive. There's huge murals on the sides of there's another bridge in Fremantle. It's like a mural, and as you move, it sort of changes view of him. I think there's a photo of me next to that on Twitter. So yeah, and then there's Bon Scott Lane in Melbourne. There's actually Judas Priest, Defenders of the Faith, I think it might be, mural in that same area. And there's all Born Again, Black Sabbath, another one of my favorite albums. That's the little devil babies. I couldn't believe that when I saw that. I was like, come on, this is, I'm in the matrix now. Someone's just designed this computer game around my silly ideas. But yeah, no, it's true. So yeah, they're massive. And I saw them in, I want to say 2010, they came to Perth at Subiaco Oval, which is a massive Aussie Rules cricket ground. Aussie Rules ground. And my wife, who's from Mauritius originally, Mauritius is probably not known for their metal community, although I hope I haven't offended like the three guys that love metal, of which I did meet one who said Ashes in Your Mouth was his favorite metal song by Megadeth. I was like, dude, I don't, like, I've come halfway around the world and met you. But took her to the concert. She didn't know one song, like literally had never heard an AC/DC song. And she walked out and said, that's the best concert I've ever been to.
Nice. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing. They're just consummate performers. And they do a big thing to Bon Scott where they have all the videos in the background of him from the early days and they play the song. So they're very respectful. And then I think the other band in Australia as well, although not as heavy, is obviously INXS. You know, if you didn't like INXS, particularly if you grew up in the 80s, then you're probably also going to struggle. They did the INXS made for TV movie. You know, so it's one of those things where, you know, rags to riches, all the sort of tropes and the stories and everything that's in there, corny, not on, I don't know if you've ever seen the India NWA one, where Eazy-E says he's sick and he's coughing, and then literally 2 minutes later in the movie he's died of AIDS. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's like a lot more that happened between. Like, I know you've got to rush through it, maybe show a little bit of respect, but yeah, it was one of those things. But yeah, AC/DC is definitely at one, no doubt.
Nice, nice. Jeff, you're quiet.
Yeah, I've had nothing to add. This has been a fascinating story. Always like listening to Punt. One of my favorite things you did recently, actually, I think it was like yesterday, the day before, was the After All the Dead guitar cover. That is a brilliant song, and you did it so well. Kept the heaviness and the emotion in it. It was very, very well done.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I thought I'd add an octave in there and muck around with it a little bit, and just to see, get a different style. I mean, Dehumanize, I know this is Judas Priest, but I just love, obviously, music. Dehumanizer, when that came out, I went to the local record store on the
day
it came out and bought it and took it home, and I was like, holy crap, this is, because we loved Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules. I was like, man, this album is absolutely amazing. Yes. And then in our group of friends, that was like S tier, like everyone loved Dehumanize. Then got on Twitter and it was sort of like, it's had a bit of a renaissance probably in the last, say, 5 years, let's say. But I didn't realize that it was something that either people didn't maybe not know about, but they didn't hold in such high esteem. So it's really great to see that it's reclaiming the mantle, because I think it's the equal of Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules, and the songs on there are spectacular. So big fan.
I don't know what you mean by equal. I think Dehumanizer's top tier and Mob Rules, Heaven Hell are a little bit below that.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. I can't separate them. That's like separating your kids.
Yeah, okay. Well, don't separate your kids, man. Keep them together.
I think Jeff, when I first came on Twitter, Jeff did a ranking of Sabbath albums, and you had Dehumanizer 2 or 3, didn't you?
Yeah, the top 4 or 5 kind of vary. It's Dehumanizer, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, Vol 4, and Sabotage. Kind of those ones just kind of flip around back and forth, but those are always the top. Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell are a step or two down.
So, Punt, I was looking over the times Priest has played Australia. So I take it you haven't seen him.
Unfortunately, where I live, because Australia is a very big land.
Yeah.
It was either too young or not able to get across to where that was. The nearest city to where I live on a plane is nearly a 3-hour plane flight. So I'm in what's classed the most isolated city in the world. Or one of, and we're actually closer to the capital of Indonesia than we are to the capital of Australia, and we're on the same continent.
That's great. That is crazy. Yeah, well, they haven't played much. It looks like 11 or 12 shows. From the first time they played was 2001 Demolition Tour, then the Nostradamus Tour in 2008, 5 shows. Redeemer Souls Tour, 6 shows in 2015, but they always play, looks like, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, and Brisbane. And that's the only places they've ever played. So, yeah, it's tough to get out there.
Yeah, in the last tour, they didn't come to Perth. I think they just did Melbourne and Sydney or something. And
yes.
So that was pretty disappointing. And for whatever reason, it was just impossible for me to get across to those. I had a dear friend that went, and Travis, if you're listening, hello. He's like the ultimate metalhead guy that I went up, one of the other guys I went to school with, and he sent me a few pictures on social media, so I was like as close as I could get. But I was actually supposed to be in Ireland last weekend for the Judas Priest with, if you know, Gav on Twitter.
Love that, so dude.
He's
fellow Kiss hater. So
he hates, man. Does he ever hate Kiss?
Me too.
And I was supposed to go across, and even after work, the stuff with work, I was still going to go. And then they organized my son's dad's and kids camp through school literally on that night.
Oh,
and I had one of those moments where you sort of look in the mirror and you got to say, right, what? You know, is it Rob and the boys or is it your own child? So I think I chose the right thing.
Yes. Oh, I think you did too.
Yeah.
I disagree. But I'm the only one here who doesn't have kids, so.
The only other option was to get him in the suitcase and put him in the hold of the plane and then pull him out and we go to the concert together, but I didn't think my wife would be too keen on that, so.
He could roll up in a ball. It gets a little cold down there from what I hear, but, you know. I mean, dogs make it.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, it would have been an amazing concert. It was the only standing room one in Europe, I think. So that's that was another reason to go. Everything else is seated for whatever reason. So, but yeah, it's sort of a bit of a hole there. I mean, I missed Ronnie James Dio. I happened to be in Europe when he came to Perth, and like the only time at that stage that I'd managed to save up money when I was young to go to Europe, and then he turns up in Perth, and then unfortunately he passed away not long after that. It was the Heaven and Hell tour. So yeah, very rarely you get stuff down here. So when they do come, you go, you know. And I'll be honest, I probably would have gone to see Martika back in the day. That's how desperate we were for music, if you remember her. So yeah, we would have gone to see anyone. The opening of an envelope, as they would say.
Yeah, well, no plans this tour that I've seen yet. But that's all right. There's no plans for them coming anywhere near me either. So
yeah,
that's the way the ball bounces. So you mentioned that you're really into music history, metal history.
Hmm.
How did you get into that?
I think it just evolved from the music. I actually did a history and politics degree at university, and then I did a postgraduate in journalism. And then ended up working in something completely unrelated. And my parents sort of looking at me saying, oh, glad we put some money into your education on that. so I think there's always a love of history. I really enjoyed reading about that as a kid and then obviously studying it later on. And so the two came together. And I think the other part about it was that sort of evolution of music and just listening to stuff and saying, oh, wow, that's, look, the classic one is obviously Am I Evil, Diamond Head, and then Metallica covering it. And then that's like the gateway for a lot of people to go, oh, right, so that's where they got that type of sound from, or that's where they picked up this thing. And then Black Sabbath, oh, that's where they, you know, got that style, you know, whatever it might be. So it all sort of grew from there. And then just, you know, over time you become a bit more adept at picking it up. Once I started to learn a bit more about music, then I could sort of understand maybe what they were trying to achieve. But then the final part is with YouTube, people put these videos up where they'll say, like, this is where they stole this part of the song from. And you're like, oh, wow, that's pretty full on. And that Come As You Are, Killing Joke one is just the classic where that riff is just, right. Like, but then that's lifted from two or three bands before that. Like, they didn't even, you know, like everyone's like, oh, Killing Joke. I was like, no, actually, there's a whole bunch. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So that did that. And then there was that series. I don't know if you guys remember. I can't remember the name of it, but there was that guy who's like the metal historian journalist guy, and he interviewed everyone. He did the Evolution of Metal series, and he started out, I don't know. Yeah, Jeff, you might remember. You seem to remember the one I'm talking about.
it ended with the Heavy Metal Family Tree. It was amazing.
Yes.
He had a great interview with Gall, where he's like, where the interviewer's like, so what do you think about, where do you get your inspiration from? And Gall, in this like dungeon with his corpse paint on and holding a goblet of wine, goes, Satan. And it's just the creepiest thing. Headbanger's Journey, that's what it's called.
That was it, yes. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was a great series. I mean, he started off instead of the, even before the 1950s, with some of the Black American original sort of rock and rollers, inverted commas, you know, and their guitar sound and how it sort of sounded a bit distorted, even though it wasn't. And then through to the 50s and 60s, and then right, you know, obviously Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, all that sort of stuff. It was a really well done series, and particularly for guys like us, the three of us and the millions of people on Twitter who love metal, it was just a really well done, eye-opening and very knowledgeable put together piece. It's so well, I can't remember the guy's name, but anyway, whoever you are, shout out, well done, mate.
Yeah.
Well, one of the most important metal albums, in my opinion, and in the evolution of metal, is Sad Wings of Destiny by Judas Priest. And today, on this day in 1976, That Beautiful Bad Boy was released. One of the most influential albums, in my opinion. But yeah, this very day that we're recording, in 1976, my favorite album of all time, Sad Wings of Destiny, was released. So a little bit of history there.
We've had one extra day with it in Australia.
Oh, yeah, that would be yesterday for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, with you and your complicated time zones. We were trying to figure out the times to get this all together, and my head exploded. I'm picking up pieces off the wall to this day. Jeff sent that thing out yesterday with all the different time zones in Australia. Oh, my God. How do you live?
It's a big, big country. And the role that I had before, obviously, finished in this redundancy thing, I looked after a team from London to Auckland, Wellington, in New Zealand. So it was like a 6 o'clock start pretty much every day. And then you could finish as late as sort of midnight, and then people would still be messaging you. So there was always someone calling you. Time zones, when you live down here and you're dealing with particularly people in the Northern Hemisphere, UK and America, it can be a difficult thing. But yeah, Sad Wings of Destiny, amazing album. I actually listened to it just before we came on here. It's really annoying. Apple Music doesn't have it on there for some rights issue in Australia. I don't know what it is.
Anywhere. They don't have it anywhere.
A Gull Records, right?
Yes, it's a Gull Records.
Okay.
Yeah, the first two releases, Rock-A-Rolla and Sad Wings of Destiny. And interestingly enough, Judas Priest bought the rights back from Gull Records about a year ago. And so everyone was hoping, naturally, that you'd get the first two releases on streaming service, but it hasn't happened yet, and I haven't heard anything about it. And so who knows what's going on with that?
Yeah, that's crazy. It was part of the reason thanks to Judas Priest, part of the reason I got a YouTube premium subscription was so I could get that Rock-A-Rolla. And there's a couple of other ones that just you can't, like, obviously they talked about Black Sabbath, the Tony Martin albums, all those you just can't get on streaming. But people on YouTube, kind people, have done playlists for people who can't see. I'm doing the inverted commas.
right.
We love those people. Thank you.
Yeah, the news today, the big news today for me was finding out that the box set for the remasters of the Tony Martin albums is going to be released. So I'm very excited about that, and hopefully they appear also on streaming services, because I do the same thing. Hit up YouTube for the for Tear and Headless Cross and Cross of Cross Purposes.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. I know Subsequent Seer, if anyone out there knows him on Twitter, he had a total meltdown. I'm pretty sure he's probably been lying in his bed recovering for like the last 24 hours. It's been too much for him. He's been waiting his whole life. So I think Gav's upset because he's lost half his comic material now, writing him off saying it's never going to happen.
Yeah, Jeff's the biggest Tony Martin fan I know, I think.
No, that's Sub. That's Subsequent Seer.
Sub.
Yeah, he's bigger than I am, even. And I'm like number two.
Yeah, thank God for the physical media. I have Cross Purposes on CD, which I bought, you know, many, many years ago. And I sort of thankfully, I've only got one box of my CDs available because we're moving house. So what I'm doing this YouTube channel, I can only grab what I can get, and that's somewhere else packed away. But when I get into a new place, I will. But, you know, thank you to physical media, because we can still access some of these things. And then obviously the legends that rip them up until they get pulled off by whoever. Sharon, probably half the time.
Sharon!
Sharon! So, we love it. But, it's old tapes and all those sort of things. If you can still got them, you can still play them, you're a step ahead of the game.
Yeah, it's really cool. The new Priest album, Invincible Shield, they have a tape. Really, awesome. The old cassette tape. So that's pretty cool. People are going to thrift stores, pawn shops. I don't know what you call them in Australia, but going trying to find the old tape decks.
Yes. Yeah. I've still got mine somewhere floating around, covered in stickers and all sorts of stupid things that we used to do. So I was very fortunate having a mother who told me never to throw anything out I don't think my wife's too happy with my mother's decision to train that into me. But
so is that why you're moving house? Because you're a hoarder and you need more room?
No. No, it's only music stuff that I do. Yeah, so yeah, it's going to be good. I've got a little guitar room in there and with some double bricked acoustic bricks in there to stop the noise getting out, so I'll be able to play away to my heart's content. But it's good to keep that sort of stuff. And I've even still got original posters from my bedroom when I was 13. Like, I got the Euthanasia poster on the day of release. The first 10 people who bought the CD got the giant poster. So I sprinted this record store in the CBD or downtown of Perth. And I got, my brother actually drove me there because I was too young to drive, and he dropped me off. And I was like, yes, I hope I'm not too late. And I was the only person waiting there. So I thought it'd be like, I was going to be, there'd be number 11 and be so upset. And I got there, I was number one, and I think I was number 2, 3, 4, and 5 as well.
Thought there'd be tents set up on the sidewalk waiting to get in, everything else.
Yeah, I know.
Well, congratulations to you on being unemployed yet buying a new house. So, I mean, that's awesome. Yes. I don't know how you pull that shit off, but you got to give me some instructions on that one, man.
Yes, my wife did enjoy that comment on Twitter the other day. She said, she took me aside and she's like, yeah, I know. Well, we started built. So in Australia, you basically, a lot of people buy old houses, knock them down and build the new ones in like a sort of an older suburb. So they don't do like sort of a whole bunch at the, oh, there goes my wife walking down the stairs now, a whole bunch at the one time. So we started that when I was gainfully employed, and we finished it when I'm not gainfully employed. So, hey, if the YouTube thing doesn't work off, I'll be digging ditches or sweeping streets or something. No, I will have to go get a proper job at some point. But, yeah, it's exciting to be in there. So, but, yeah, appreciated that little bit of humor, especially, particularly my wife.
Awesome.
So they're home from the shopping trip. We better get on with it. Jeff, what are we doing today, man?
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take a look at how Priest has influenced some of our favorite bands and pick a song that has influenced a band. So Punt, being a thrash metal aficionado, is going to take a look at songs that went... Priest songs that led to, that had a serious influence on Metallica and Megadeth. So Punt, take over from there. What Priest song has been super influential to Metallica?
Yes. Well, it's one of my all-time favorite Priest songs. Maybe it is my favorite. I'm not sure. That's a tough one. But the Ripper, I reckon, has to have had a massive influence on that early thrash days. So Sad Wings of Destiny, which we mentioned earlier, and the Unleashed in the East version, which I actually prefer because it's a little bit sped up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I think both, obviously the original, I mean, you can't have the other one until you have the original, but Sad Wings of Destiny, I mean, I know Dave Mustaine said that that was a hugely influential album on him, and he was obviously hugely influential on thrash and the whole metal scene, but you know, Metallica in a massive way when he was there in the band. And one of Lars's favorite albums is Unleashed in the East, which he's been on record to say that he also loves. So you would think that some of the songs on there would have had a fairly good and big impact on those guys. So, you know, when you listen to it, it's very, the main riffs in there are very angular. It's very, I mean, it is metal. It's probably about as metal as you can get. It's like barbed wire, if you know, you replace the guitar strings with barbed wire. And that's the riff, you know, the other sort of intricate guitar work in there. But I think the other part about it is it's the subject matter, murder and the serial killer, obviously Jack the Ripper. And that, when you look at songs, you know, certainly Good Morning Black Friday, for example, I mean, if that is not a direct part of the lineage, I sort of don't. I don't know what is. That's the ape in the tree before we became humans. I think that, you know, that was definitely a massive evolutionary connection in there. There's no doubt about it. And I just I did a little bit of, because I'm, you know, obviously I take these things fairly seriously. So I thought I'd do a little bit of research. And one thing that I found was actually Dave Mustaine said that Sad Wings of Destiny was the album that made him into want to play metal and become a metalhead.
And smart man.
He said, I remember when I was living with my mum and we moved in with my middle sister. I have three older sisters. And she was married to a police officer that was the chief of police in a city called Stanton in California. He walked into the house, heard Priest blaring in the bedroom I was sharing with their son. That was the first time I ever stood up for metal. And when he stomped out, you know what I did? I put the record right back on.
Yes. Oh,
fuck yeah.
Yeah. And then in another interview, he said that guy actually gave him a whack. And maybe not in that incident, but in a different separate incident. And he was like, to get revenge on this guy, he's like, I'm just going to listen to Judas Priest nonstop.
Very cool. Full blast.
Which is very Dave Mustaine, particularly early Angry Dave. That seemed very much spot on to it. So, I just think when you hear that song, you can hear the influence. And, you know, when you talk about Metallica and Megadeth, you've got to think about those early days and who that they were listening to. And there's absolutely no doubt you've got all the new wave of British heavy metal stuff. You've got, obviously massive bands like Iron Maiden and whatever, but, you know, Diamond Head was a key part of it. Motorhead was a key part of it. And I think Judas Priest, I think the difference probably is that Mustaine was quite happy to talk about, he seemed more open to be talking about Judas Priest. Where I think with Lars, because he's that European and he knew all these bands that no one else knew about, he talked about the Diamond Heads and the other sort of more unusual bands that maybe the American audience didn't know and maybe didn't give the Iron Maidens and Judas Priest as much vocal credit back in the early 80s as he probably should have. That's my theory. I don't know if it's true, because later in life, they gave Judas Priest enormous amounts of credit, getting Rob Halford in the 30th anniversary show,
right.
Doing, Rapid Fire, which is the song I'll talk about in a bit, as their connective tissue there. But I think, early for Mustaine, who had a very loud mouth on him and was very much more American in his view on it, Judas Priest probably would have been the most accessible, big, hardcore European band or British band outside of probably Iron Maiden and then going back further to Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and stuff like that. That's my theory.
I think it's a perfect one. And it's interesting that Unleash in the East was mentioned because there's a lot of Gallup on that one too. I think mainly Diamonds and Rust is really a precursor, kind of a ballad song, or not ballad, Gallup song. And songs like The Four Horsemen, and you probably have a million other examples, I think really took from particularly that song, Diamonds and Rust.
Yeah, 100%. I think, it's a key one. And I think the Unleashed in the East album, although, live, we'll call it live, but people, I think at that age, you hear that and you hear excitement and your blood's flowing and you're playing live and I can do this, maybe I can set up a band and be standing on the stage and be as cool as these guys. I mean, those sort of things really do fire people up, as Lies did with Guns N' Roses, Kiss. I know that people hate Kiss, but those Kiss live albums for a whole generation of people really got them excited about the actual band, as opposed to the sterile recording. Is not fair, but you get what I'm saying. There's something magical about that. And we've just talked about us not being able to go see bands. For many people, that was as close as they could ever get, particularly if you're living in America or Australia and these guys are from the UK. Like, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of disappointed that Priest doesn't have more live albums. I mean, they had Unleashed in the East, and then there's a huge gap till Priest Live. That wasn't until, 87? It seems like a lot of bands put out a lot more live content. And I know Iron Maiden, puts out a live album of every tour, it seems.
Yes.
So. Yeah, that's kind of disappointing. But they've been, especially since the reunion, they've been really picking it up as far as live albums. I know the very first live VHS tape I bought was even before we had a VHS player. But I had heard that Judas Priest put out a live tape, which was the live Vengeance. So I had to run out, and I'm just a little kid. I don't know how old I was at that time, 12. I had to run out and buy that tape and then just kind of wait for my folks to get a VHS player. So I held onto that thing for a year or two before I finally got to play it. So
you bought the car engine and then built the car around it.
Exactly right, man. Exactly right. And then I remember my dad finally came home with a VHS player, and at that time it was Beta or VHS. And Betas really didn't take off, but I was praying, please don't get a Beta, because my tape is VHS. Please don't get a Beta player. So he ended up making the right decision, as it turns out, because Betas kind of went by the wayside. But anyway,
yeah,
that's my story.
Funny side note, I still have my dad's Betamax. Beta. That still works. So he bought the Beta. He bought the Beta Hi-Fi, and it came with Raiders of the Lost Ark as the tape.
Oh, there you go.
And no one had Raiders of the Lost. You couldn't buy it in Australia at that early. You could not buy it in the shops. And kids would come to my house and like, oh, watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. Can't believe this. Like, you know, whatever. But he bought it because it was the Hi-Fi. The VHS ones were, they were not for music, not as strong.
Exactly.
And he had this friend, and this friend worked at this, like, I can't remember if it was a radio station or a TV station, but they just chucked these Betamax. So they'd record music on them, play them between a TV show or during a TV, and then they'd just chuck them in the bin. And this guy would like collect all these tapes and give them to my dad. And they'd be everything from like Sting and the Police through to, you know, like Madonna, or it could be jazz, or it could, like, whatever it was. And so he just put it on, and, you know, we'd listen to it. And sometimes they were good and you'd keep them, and sometimes they were crap and they got put in the back of the cupboard. But yeah, still floating around there somewhere.
Wow. I bet it's worth a lot of money too, especially if something works.
Yeah, I actually contacted Sony about it. This is years ago on Facebook, and they said, oh, we'll come and collect it and we'll give you something for it. But that particular part of it was like Sony X, which was their sort of club. It disappeared in the wayside and it sort of never happened. But yeah, it's probably something that could be in a museum maybe or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but it has nostalgic feelings for you. It's because it was your dad, so I could totally understand that. But yeah, you don't ever hear or see. A lot of people don't know about the Betamax.
No,
so that's
the sheer amount of piracy that we did. I shouldn't say that, but the sheer amount of piracy my brother and I did connecting up the VHS when we bought it. Go to the video store, get Predator out, put Predator in the VHS, put the, you know, and because you couldn't do VHS to VHS. They had like some way of stopping between the similar system, but the VHS to Beta, because no one really had the Beta, we could overrule it. So, yeah, and then you could record back. So, yeah, those are the days, tape swapping, VHS and Beta recording.
Yeah, you get in serious trouble. I mean, back then, the beginning of every tape, there's that big FBI warning. FBI in the States, FBI is going to come knock down your door and take all your shit if you record this.
In Australia, I don't know if you guys had the same one, but it was like, you wouldn't steal a car.
Yeah.
And then Yeah, you wouldn't steal your mate's, I don't know, Ferrari or whatever it was. Or, you know. So why would you steal that? It's like, yeah, because I wouldn't steal a car. That's a little bit different.
Because you're I'd get
in trouble. Yeah, exactly. Because people would see the Ferrari outside my crap unit when I'm like 20 years old and say, there's no way that guy can afford that. So.
That's awesome.
So but did we cover, go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, just on, so stay in class, I think there's a lot of songs that are connected through to both of those bands on that album that have affected them. But I would say, like, Beyond the Realms of Death, as far as what happened later with things like, you know, even Fade to Black and stuff, that sort of acoustic style and getting, you know, harder and faster. But even like, so when you listen to a song like Exciter, you can definitely hear that Killing Is My Business, Kill 'Em All sort of fast paced sort of moving to it. There's no doubt that that's in there. And then I think later, once they, when, you know, British Steel and Screaming for Vengeance, I think certainly on the Metallica side, which I'll sort of move on to next, they, these guys wanted success, you know, they wanted money. And Judas Priest was, they were like the premier metal band, well, for me anyway, I think, at that particular time. And they were having commercial success as well as, you know, being respected for their craft and, you know, being metal doyens. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, Electric Eye, which I mentioned earlier about my daughter, loves that. But then on the same album, you know, you've got Fever, for example, which is a, you know, a bit more of a calmer one. And you've got Take These Chains and stuff like that. You know, they're not hardcore bangers necessarily. But they weren't afraid to sort of go out and try different things and do new things, which I think definitely affected, certainly Lars. I reckon he would have seen that and gone, hang on, maybe we can go in different directions. Maybe not initially, obviously, but I think later on in their career. And I think that's one thing for me with Judas Priest that has been an overlasting, had an overlasting effect, I think, on all the bands coming through, is that you don't have to pigeonhole yourself. You can have your style, but you don't, but you can try new things. I mean, like, who would have thought Turbo, but then who would have thought only a few years later, Painkiller?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so they really did have an ability to sort of change things up and try new things, and absolute respect for them doing it, but also doing it in a style that a lot of people still really like. Now, okay, maybe not so much Turbo as everyone's cup of tea. I like it. I'm That's a big right. fan.
You can like it all you want.
Yeah,
seems to be property. Popular with the Australian Twitter people.
Yeah, I think it is. One of my mates, the first first Priest he ever heard was Turbo. He'd never heard of them before.
And he still likes Priest?
Yeah. I mean, probably not as much as me. but he still does. But, I mean, we talked about You Say Yes from Point of Entry. Like, I think that song's fun. Like, but the thing that was probably different for us in Australia is that we didn't come with the baggage that they had in Europe and America, where you had, well, certainly in Perth anyway, because we were so small and isolated, you didn't have that same scene where you had someone who could say, well, I lived in London and I went and saw them three times at the O2 or whatever it was called, or the Hammersmith Odeon or whatever, and that's not called like that, whatever. It was just like some random guy gave you a tape which probably wound its way from London on some guy that flew in and he taped it and whatever. And so when you got it, you didn't have the preconceived notions outside of, you know, maybe what you heard on a sort of weird university radio station or something. So That was a really interesting for me when I came onto Twitter. It was like, you know, like my classic one is Escape from Ride the Lightning. It was like, I remember getting onto Twitter and going, this is like 10 years ago, people actually hate that song. Like my brother and I, we thought that was the best song on the album. We absolutely loved it. Now, because we grew up and it's like this guy and like no one's going to tell him what to do and, you know, get stuffed and all this sort of stuff. We thought it was great. And then we like I got into Twitter and was like, wow, people hate this song. It was like, Metallica hate this song?
Yeah. Well, maybe in Australia you hear it upside down so it sounds better.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, or you hear it in the future or.
Yeah, that's it.
It's interesting you mentioned some of the 80s albums in particular. You think that had any effect on the Black Album in any way? Kind of a little more radio-friendly type direction?
Yeah, I think definitely. I reckon they were 100% influenced by that concept of being able to do, well, I mean, we just talked about Escape. That was their attempt to make a radio-friendly song back on the second album. So there's no way that they weren't going to be doing that by the time they got to album 5. And Lars is a smart businessman, networky sort of guy, and he would have recognized that if they could do something that the masses liked, and if that did involve cranking it down a bit, I hate the expression selling out, but if they, you know, decided to go for something a bit more mainstream, then that was probably going to work for them. And there's no doubt that I think, you know, Judas Priest were leaders in that. And you know, from British Steel onwards, they had their moments where they connected in a more broader way. They had their moments where they probably didn't. But even Painkiller, when you think about it, that was them reconnecting with the mainstream of metal, if that makes any sense. Do you know what I mean? So
right,
wasn't they were, trying to be the next new kids on the block. They were trying to sort of go back to something that was hardcore that people like, and people did love it.
My take on Painkiller is it's the reciprocation of influences. So you have Metallica coming around, putting out this shit that was influenced by Priest, and then Priest has put out a mediocre album just beforehand, a shit album, in my opinion, just before that. And now they're taking Metallica's influences and throwing it into their music, and that there you have Painkiller.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of those. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just saying a lot of those older bands did that at that time, and I know, and I'll probably get lambasted again because it's Kiss, but Kiss brought out Revenge, and they had that song Unholy on there. I mean, that is their most sort of inverted commas thrashy song they ever came out with. And I saw an interview years later, and he was like, Metallica were killing it, and no one was listening to us. So we thought maybe we can just do similar to what they did. You know, yeah. And in fairness, like for them, for Kiss, it's a decent song. But
I love Unholy. That is my favorite Kiss song, and I hate Kiss.
Yeah.
So that's that's how good that song is.
And weirdly enough, Metallica, there was a show called Rage in Australia, which is a late night music show, which was on a public television network, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, ABC, started at say around midnight. It went through till 6 a.m. And then at about 2 or 3 a.m, they'd get a guest person to guest host on there. So they had Henry Rollins, Soundgarden, blah, blah. They had Metallica do it one time. And they played Unholy. It was one of the songs. They played Trashed from Born Again.
Wow.
They played,
nice.
There was Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. I can't remember what Judas Priest song it was on there. But they had Jesus Christ Pose. They had Henry Rollins, Low Self Opinion. Anyway, that tape, which I recorded, is pretty much formulated most of the bands outside the hardcore ones that I already knew. It gave me such an eye-opener to all these different albums. So sort of rounding back to what you're talking about, there's no doubt that they took on board some of the commercial stylings for it. And Judas Priest were one of the first. I mean, Black Sabbath were big, and obviously Ozzy solo was even bigger. But those sort of more traditional ones, they did that. I think they were popular because of their music and who they were and etc. But Judas Priest and definitely Ozzy, they ramped that. I mean, Ozzy had TV ads and, you know, they really ramped up that commercialized version of it. And what was a very British thing, which they're normally a bit more staid and, you know, conservative, less sort of prone to advertising, they Americanized it and really went much harder. So it doesn't surprise me that Lars and Boys did that.
Yep. Yeah, and by that time, Ozzy was pretty much based out of L.A., you know, when he started his whole solo career. And of course, Sharon was guiding the whole ship there. So, I mean, you could see how he wouldn't have the traditional tea party. You know, he'd get out there between him and kind of being Americanized, and Sharon, of course, being smart in business. Mm-hmm. So that kind of explains why they went that route, which turned out excellent for them.
Yes. And she was sober, which probably didn't hurt because Ozzy certainly wasn't.
No.
So I reckon the other part as well with Judas Priest, very, and this is probably more on the Megadeth side, they're very theatrical, like Sin After Sin, and the actual song Sinner is so theatrical in its nature. Like, I mean, that could be like an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical or something. It's just the way the music flows and builds and all the different parts that they have in there. And I think with Dave, he never had the singing chops to ever pull that off. But I reckon the part that attracted him to Judas Priest was that theatrical stuff. And you listen to his, when he sliced in all the, you know, different bits and parts from him talking and doing different characters. And
like on World Needs a Hero, where he's throwing shit in left and right.
Yeah. Captive Honor, when he does the court scene. And
yep.
But all that sort of stuff is that big sort of like, let's be theatrical and let's be a bit different and try something new. I reckon if he'd been a better singer, he would have done this sort of stuff, but he couldn't pull it off. And I know this came up on Twitter the other day. He tried to get the singer from Agent Steel, that John, I want to say Cyrus, I don't know how you say his name, but one of the comments he made, it was an interview that I saw, and he's like, we could do what Judas Priest does with you sing. We could hit those high notes and we could, you know, so that was obviously something he was trying to emulate, and he just didn't, he had the guitar chops, he had the music writing chops, I think he had the lyrics, but not the singing. So he went down a sort of more theatrical, fun way, which a lot of people don't like, but I really do like the theatrical stuff. And when I was on the So Far, So Pod, So What cast there, that was hilarious when I said, I don't understand how people can get upset about a band being theatrical when he literally, one of their most famous and respected songs is guy singing from the point of view of a nuclear bomb. Like, it's like, come on, guys. Like, if you haven't, if you're not on board by then, you're gonna
yeah.
There is no line too far once you've accepted that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it wouldn't be Megadeth.
No.
I mean, it would be totally different. It'd be a different band. They probably wouldn't be as popular. My guess would be.
Because it'd be kind of rehashing.
Oh, sorry. I just said they would have been rehashing Judas Priest, and nobody wants that. I mean, they're so individual, especially with his voice.
Yeah.
That kind of sets them apart. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hunt, that was amazingly illuminating. Thank you so much. Jay, what is your bands and songs?
Well, I got the assignment wrong.
Okay.
So I'm just going to jump right into it and kind of wing it. So I was going to say, I was going to start out with Diamonds and Rust and how Diamonds and Rust kind of influenced the whole Gallup thing. And then I was going to say Let Us Pray, Call for the Priest. And then I thought Dissident Aggressor, and then I thought, well, shit, all these songs are off of Sin After Sin. So then I thought, I'll just go over the influential songs from Sin After Sin, because all the ones that I was picking was from that album. So just like you said, Punt, Sinner, the album starts off with Sinner, and it's very theatrical. It has that, of course, that scream in the beginning. You have the little Glenn Leeds weaving in between the verses, you know, and you have the KK whammy in the beginning and the KK kind of whammy free flowing. Yeah, the free flowing solo thing, which, of course, you know, a million bands, especially in the 70s, you know, you had Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, who are kind of in concert. They're kind of jam bands, which I think KK got a lot from that, because if you listen to Sinner and when they play it live, it's never the same because of that solo. So it's always different. It's always kind of free flowing until he hits that one little riff that tells you that it's going back into the song. And you could always tell when he's done, that riff comes at all different times. So I think that was really influential. Then, of course, Diamonds and Rust. I mean, the metal Gallup, man. Where would Iron Maiden be without Diamonds and Rust, you know? Of course, Deep Purple, Hard Lovin' Man, and This Flight Tonight by Nazareth, Children of the Grave, the end of Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath. Is this the end? Kind of had that Gallup. Yep. So Priest wasn't the first. But I think, like you were saying, with Unleashed in the East, I think Diamonds and Rust really exposed a lot more people to the heavy metal Gallup. And I think that really played a huge role in Iron Maiden as far as their sound. Now, they won't admit that, and I think they have a lot of different bands that they kind of were influenced by, but I think that has a lot to do with the chug and the Iron Maiden Gallop type thing. Is, I don't know why they call it the Iron Maiden Gallop. A lot of bands do it, but that's what it's called anyway. Then Starbreaker. I mean, the opening drum part, Simon Phillips. I mean, super influential. super influential with the drums and Simon Phillips. You got the double bass, and again the little Glenn leads woven between the verses and the guitar harmonies. A lot of bands, well, besides like, you know, Led Zeppelin, or Jimmy Page would do a lot of little interludes in between, but seems like on this album, pretty much every song there's little Glenn licks in between the verses here and there. And of course the guitar harmony lead break in Starbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
The guitar harmony is huge in this album. Now you were talking about Ripper and Victim of Changes. Of course, those start out with, you know, with the guitar harmony, but it seems like, you know, almost every song on Sin After Sin kind of does that. I think Starbreaker is very influential just because of the harmony and the Simon Phillips drums. And then Let Us Pray a Call for the Priest. I mean, Simon Phillips said this is the birth of speed metal, but that's probably just because he played on that record. I think a lot of it was kind of Deep Purple, Ian Paice, Fireball. That immediately comes to mind as far as early double bass drum. And again, starts with the dual guitars, and it's kind of a, you know, an epic before its time. There's so many different parts of it. The metal chug, Rob's metal scream in that, which is a legend. So I think that is influential in all aspects of that whole song. Then you come to Last Rose of Summer. Again, very influential on how to do an 80s ballad. You know, even though this is in the 70s, there's a million bands that in the 80s went and did a ballad, and it worked for them, especially the hair bands. I mean, ballads, you know, once MTV came out, ballads were a huge thing. Every band did it. And Last Rose of Summer was, you know, a true ballad in between this kick-ass metal record. And it's so soft and so sweet and so nice. And as far as sequencing, it really broke the record up.
Uh-huh.
You're having banger after banger after banger after banger, and then The Last Rose of Summer comes in. It's beautiful, it's nice, sweet, breaks up, you know, all the hard metal, puts you in a nice mood, kind of like Sabbath with all their little songs, you know, the dark and light, how they did that. They did this also, with that. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, just two seconds. It sits at number 4 on the album.
Yes.
Now, there's another band that at number 4 on their albums like to put sort of softer songs or more sort of, you know, relaxed numbers. Metallica, they always enjoyed a number 4 just to break up. I reckon Lars definitely learned a lot about album placing from Judas Priest, from Judas Priest.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. Sequencing is huge in records. Then you go into Raw Deal. Musically, not too influential, but lyrically, I think the lyrics were way before its time. Rob essentially came out as a gay man. You know, nobody cared or nobody really paid attention. You know, they're just listening to the music. But I don't know, but, you know, maybe that gave him, made it easier for him to come out eventually, since he was basically already out. I don't know. That's just my guess. But, and then Here Come the Tears, one of my favorite songs. It's a proto power ballad. I mean, this is, you know, there are a lot of songs and a lot of bands that we were talking about before, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, you know. But this is, when I think of a power ballad, this, Here Come the Tears, is a total power ballad. And you have the beautiful guitar in the beginning, and then just the heavy, you know, at the end. I mean, it's a friggin' blueprint for a power ballad, Here Come the Tears. And it's, you know, one of my favorite Priest songs ever. And totally, that goes...
It's an absolute ripper of a song. I just love that song so much. And that's a standout, like, because I think if people had never heard Judas Priest before, it's a bit like they see these names, Black Sabbath, Megadeth, and Judas Priest, and they don't know what to, and you go and you hear that, and you're like, whoa. But then when it ends, it's like, ah, okay, that's Judas Priest.
Yep.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And yeah. Speaking of ending, that goes right in fact, there's no break. It goes right into Dissident Aggressor. And hey, Dissident Aggressor, what can you say? I mean, yeah. I mean, just metal before its time, a true banger. I mean, you know, millions of bands have done it. Slayer did it, you know, on one of their albums. What was it? South of Heaven or one of them. I don't have my Slayer discography. Yeah,
Show No Mercy, I think it was on.
Yeah, Show No Mercy.
The Slayer fans will tell you, don't worry.
Yeah, no, they will. No, I'm going to be getting emails left and right. No, I have it written down here, but anyway, I'm an idiot. Yeah, I mean, it just goes right into that, and I think Slayer is one of the bands actually that I have written down that were very influenced by Priest. So I think that whole album, Sin After Sin, we've gone through how it has really influenced a lot of bands. And then, of course, Slayer, what did Kerry King say? I'm all out of order here. But Kerry King said, there would be no Slayer without Priest. That's a quote. Now, when Slayer first formed in 81, they bonded by playing Priest covers, Dissident Aggressor on South of Heaven. Kerry King has the same Priest story that I do. He grew up in L.A., and he heard Living After Midnight and Breaking the Law on KMET, which was a local rock station in L.A., and immediately latched on to Priest. So Slayer was totally inspired by it. Both he and Jeff Hanneman, they both say that that Priest was a huge inspiration. Glenn Tipton's Kerry King's favorite guitar player. And like I was saying, they used to do, you know, in the first lineup, I mean, Slayer's had different lineups, but the first iteration, they used to sit around and drink beer and listen to Judas Priest nonstop. And like I said, they did a lot of covers when they first started out. So I think Slayer's one of the bands, just like you were saying with Metallica and Megadeth. Slayer's one of the bands that is highly influenced by Priest. And also, you have to say Iron Maiden. No, nobody will admit it. All the, you know, the, you have the Maiden camp and the Priest camp fighting constantly. But I think Diamonds and Rust specifically really influenced the whole Maiden sound. So that's my two cents.
That makes sense. All right, cool. So I thought I was going to have a lot of trouble with this because my preferred genres of metal, being doom metal, I didn't think there would be a lot of Priest influence in it. But then I was doing some research on a band called Trouble. They're one of my favorites. They're a Chicago doom band. They started in like 83 or whatever. And of all the bands that I listen to, Trouble has the most Halford-esque vocals. Eric Wagner he has since passed, but he has a brilliant high pitch. He has a very strong mid-range. But musically, I thought they're Sabbath. You know, they get their influences from Sabbath. There can't be any Judas Priest influence. I found an interview from Bruce Franklin, who is the guitarist from Trouble. And he describes the band, he described Trouble as a Sabbath sound, but adding the twin guitars of Judas Priest. I was like, shit, all right. And then he goes on and talks about Island of Domination from Sad Wings of Destiny, the closing track to Sad Wings of Destiny, which is a nice, very heavy, also kind of Sabbath-y. It's a riff track. It is centered around a big riff with guitar harmonies. And listen to that a few times with that in mind. I was like, shit, this sounds like the Tempter or Assassin from Trouble, some early Trouble. And so I was like, great. And then I looked and was like, wait, Trouble has a very 70s style to them. They're very kind of late stage hippie looking in their dress and their whatever. And so I pulled up a picture of Trouble. And I pulled up a picture of early Priest from like the old Gray Whistle test and was like, I could not tell them apart. I even took screenshots and sent it to Jay. It was like, that was how funny it was.
Hilarious. It looks like the same band.
Yeah.
You have to post that on Twitter or something, huh?
Will do. Yeah. So that was my biggest, like, I was just blown away by how much Priest had actually ended up influencing this band, Trouble. All right. Then for the second round of, I was trying to figure out how to get into this, Carcass, the death metal band, the melodic death metal band and grindcore band from England. They saw an interview with Bill Steer, who is the guitarist for Carcass. And he was going on about Killing Machine. Killing Machine is not, it's a great album, but it's not one that I would think would influence a death metal band. But he talks about, especially on Take on the World, how the drum pattern is just lifted directly, the drum pattern to Carcass is lifted directly to from, I just lost the name of that song, Take on the World. Where during the verses, he is they're not just slamming on the ride cymbal or a hi-hat. It's a very subdued snare and bass that is driving that song. And that's what the Ken Owen, the drummer from Carcass, took massive influence from. So that is what I got. Doing this assignment actually taught me a lot, and I was very pleasantly surprised by doing this research. So I'm glad that Punt came up with this idea, because it opened my eyes a lot.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned Hellbent for Leather, or he mentioned Killing Machine. Same. Okay, try to confuse the people. that's kind of the transitional record, in my opinion, as far as Priest, kind of more styled towards the quick hit singles, as opposed to the early Priest, which is a lot more proggy, you know, a lot more, I don't know, you know, proggy longer songs, kind of drawn out, to where Hellbent for Leather, Killing Machine came right before, of course, one of the most commercial records, British Steel. So it was a real transitional record, and it's funny that a thrash band would find kind of a more poppy Priest record influential.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, the Delivering the Goods was the Megadeth single that they covered. So, yeah.
Oh. It's like killer song. That's the first Priest song I ever heard.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's obviously something that's there. But I think one of the things that's interesting about all these the influences that they have is like we sold.
There she is, they're back.
Hey, hey, girl.
She snuck in the munchkin.
The munchkin, she appears in every single photo. Even in Axel's grand final winning photo, like she, you can see her head sneaking through. When I had that video of me playing something, I can't remember what it was the other day. She's
like, oh, she's a sweetie. What a cutie.
Yeah, oh, thank you. She's a lovely girl. But yeah, I think all those influences, like I think we, when we listen to it now in 2024 or even in 1994 or something, we thought about it as we see them then, and we forget that they were at one stage 14 or whatever and loving that at the same time. That's why that I think that Mustaine story about his stepdad is so appropriate, because it's as much the music as it is the attitude and everything that goes along with it. And then over time, they have all these other influences that come to play, and then they create that first record. And then, as you guys have been saying, like when you hear some of these articles later in life and you go back and you go, oh wow, okay, now I can actually see that. But you kind of need that Sherpa, that information to guide you to where it is, because they've taken it and turned it into, you know, their own thing.
Right.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody takes a little bit from everyone and then puts their little twist on it. I mean, if you sounded exactly like a certain band,
then you'd be Oasis.
There you go. or Creed.
Yeah.
So yeah, and both those bands made a lot of money, so I'm just talking out my ass. But but generally putting your own twist on something, of course. And there are definitely a lot more bands, I think, that were influenced by Priest, just because I think I wouldn't consider them a new wave of heavy metal band just because they started earlier. I mean, the first record was 1974. You know, I think the new wave of British heavy metal kind of started with Iron Maiden, you know, and some Saxon records and whatnot. And it kind of blossomed from there. So I don't really consider Priest part of the new wave British heavy metal, but I consider the British new wave of heavy metal inspired by Priest, because
absolutely
they were already there, you know. And of course Sabbath, but we're talking about Priest.
But now we're gonna shift off of, what's up, Hunt?
No, I just said there's no doubt that that new wave was 100%, you know, a huge part of it was inspired by Judas Priest, particularly the more sort of notey style riffs. Like Sabbath is very chord. I mean, obviously
it's root note, and that's it.
Yeah, it's much more chord driven. Where the for me, like Priest, I always thought they used notes, like individual notes, much more selectively, often faster as well. And I can see that, obviously. I know I talked about Megadeth, but like we mentioned Electric Eye earlier, that sort of style is quite different than what Sabbath were doing. And if you listen to Black Sabbath, the very first song, of which Rob Halford's on note saying that's when metal started, and we talked about the galloping and the individual notes, that that bit at the end, like you can see it's almost like that's when, you know, plant life went this way and animal life went that way. Do you know what I mean? That was like the moment of change. Like in one part of the song you got the slower, you know, sort of heavier, doomy, and then suddenly you've got that galloping in incorporating that individual note style. It's a really interesting thing. If that's the first little animal that crawled out of the waters, and there you go. So
yeah, it's amazing. Well done.
It always goes back to Sabbath.
Of course, it always does.
I mean, it always starts with Sabbath, no matter what you want to say or what you want to do. It always starts with Sabbath. You know, Deep Purple had a lot to do with that as well, but generally it always starts with Sabbath. Yeah.
There must have been something in the water in Birmingham. Who knows?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So the next segment, we're going to get off of Sabbath, and we're going to get off of Priest, and we're going to pick an album from 2007 and have a little chat about that from each of us. Punt, what is your album from 2007?
I thought I would stick with the Megadeth run and go to United Abominations.
Okay, defend that.
Big surprise. Defend.
Hey, look, at least it's not Super Collider. It's not like it's an impossible task. So.
True.
I enjoyed United Abominations. I mean, firstly, it was one of the – I'd seen – for Megadeth the first time on the World Needs a Hero tour, then I'd seen them on The System Has Failed, and then I saw them on this. But this is the first time I'd seen them in Perth. The other times I'd had to fly to Sydney to go and see them. So that was exciting to have them in the hometown. And it was an interesting time, I think, for Megadeth then, because from memory, I think, I can't remember if Death Magnetic had just been released or was just about to come out. But obviously that had this wave of negativity, Metallica, after St. Anger. And Dave was sort of, he'd fired back, he'd had Risk, and then he'd sort of fought back a bit with World Needs a Hero. But so System Has Failed, which is an album I really enjoy, he was really starting to see that. And then I think he just went balls to the wall on United Abominations and went sort of as Megadeth-y as he could. And even the front cover, he's reliving and connecting through to Peace Sells But Who's Buying with the United Nations building getting blown up, and it's a pretty ugly front cover, but nonetheless that's what he was trying to achieve. It's a pretty decent thrash album as far as the later ones go. I'm a big fan of it. It's just, you know, very briefly, you know, Sleepwalker is a banging, that's a galloping track if you've ever heard one. He really sort of goes pretty mental on that one. And an interesting set of lyrics we talked before about the Ripper. I mean, this is about him having dreams of murdering people and he can't do it in real life, so he kills his enemies in his sleep. so if that's not a connection back to Judas Priest and the Ripper, it's not, I don't know what is. Washington is next, is Dave certainly at his most conspiratorial best. He's got some unusual beliefs, and they were fully formed by the time he got to Endgame. I think when he caught up with Alex Jones and his mates on the Conspiracy Net or whatever it's called. But that is an excellent song. We're talking about individual notey songs. That is like that classic side of heavy metal, which is, you know, there's individual pull-offs on the higher strings. And it just works really well, but it doesn't have to be the chugging chord or E string to make it sound heavy. Never Walk Alone is a similar one there. United Abominations, that's actually probably when his peak conspiracy, even calls out Kofi Annan's son in the song, who I'm sure was listening to that. He would have been at home just popping on the new Megadeth release on the day, like when I went and got the Euthanasia poster. I'm sure he sprinted to the record store to pick it up with his dad and popped it on. It was like, oh my god, Dave's had a go. I can't believe this. This is the worst day of my life.
Oh my god, Dave found out.
Oh no. I think what does he say? That's right, Kojo, or something. I didn't even know what it was called, but there you go. Gears of War, which was from a computer game. So we talked about commercializing the music, the connection through to computer games, which I think he did with Sudden Death, and he had the Duke Nukem theme. Dave always looking for a way to expand the bass out there. Probably one of the weird, just missing a couple of tracks, probably one of the weirder ones is when he redid A Tu Le Monde. Now, that is not something I would have personally have done. Which is code for I think it's pretty crap. But it's, I like the original. I think the original has a place in time and it's a great song and it obviously means a lot to him. I think redoing it in an attempt to make it a hit single or something, I just don't really understand that. And not that we want to go down this path, but it's like the remasters as well. It's like just leave stuff well alone. That song didn't do a whole heap for me.
I am torn on that particular song. At the time, I was a huge The Corner Coil fan, and so hearing her do that as a duet with Dave was actually very exciting for me. And then the final finished product was a little bit of like, okay, all right, I guess I'll try and like it. So,
The original has a special place in my heart because my wife speaks French. So when we first met, she was like, "Oh, wait, this is nice. I can get this one." But the second version that's on United Abominations does not get much of a run down on Pump Road. I'll give you a little tip. and then look, there's a couple of other interesting songs in there, but probably the funniest one, "Burnt Ice," which is the last song, which is about crystal meth and drug addiction, all this sort of stuff. When he did the concert, Dave got up there and he was like, "If you do crystal meth, do you guys mind if I swear on here? Is that okay?"
Just ask. It's totally fine.
Fuck no.
Don't you dare.
Okay. Just in case the kids, well, my daughter was there for careful. But he says, "If you do crystal meth, you're a fucking idiot." And like it was supposed to be like this whole like, wow, you know, Dave saw, except the whole crowd is like, "Mate, like you've done more drugs than anybody." If you had everyone up in this concert, we wouldn't even come to your little finger with the amount of drugs that's going through. So there was a lot of mirth, merriment, and laughing when Dave came out with that. And he was trying to be serious and trying to be the elder statesman. But look, I suppose, you know, to round it out, it's an album I like. Yes, look, I understand the failings there, of which A Tu Le Monde is probably one of the key ones. I reckon that probably the second half of the album, there are some weaker tracks in there. But having said that, looking back on it now, what was being produced at the time in metal in general, certainly from old school inverted commas or thrash style stuff, there probably wasn't a whole heap. So I actually really quite enjoyed it. And the concert tour was really good. And I thought that they performed, you know, very well on that. So would I give it a 10 out of 10? Absolutely not. But what about if I give it a 10 out of 18?
Okay.
ten with a hanger.
Yes.
Awesome.
I am trying to get over the lyrics to America Stan.
Oh, yes.
Terrible, terrible lyrics. Oh. All right. So, Jay, let's clean our palate from that. What's your album?
Well, yeah, you know, I always kind of pick some weird shit for being a kind of a metal show. I'm metal when it comes to Priest and some other bands, but I'm not 100% metal. I like some different stuff. My album is the second release from Velvet Revolver called Libertad, which means liberty in Spanish. One of my favorite albums of all time, probably in my top 15, is Contraband, Velvet Revolver's first album release. Love that album. I play it over and over and over again. Just love it. So this is Libertad is the final album because, you know, Scott Weiland imploded again. They only released two. You have Slash on guitars, Duff McKeegan, Matt Sorum, and then you have Dave Kushner playing the rhythm. But, you know, basically it's a Guns N' Roses with Scott Weiland. So Brendan O'Brien, who produced some of the STP records, produced this album. Now, Velvet Revolver initially wanted to do a concept album, but they scrapped it. They started working with Rick Rubin, but it ended up being a bad fit, and that had something to do with scrapping the concept album, other than the fact that concept albums are stupid. But Rick Rubin wasn't into it, so they went back and got a STP producer. But anyway, it's a great rock and roll record. It's fun, catchy choruses, a lot of cool hooks. Not as heavy as Contraband. A lot more hooky, more Contraband had a lot more Guns N' Roses in it. This album has a lot more STP in it, mm-hmm. for whatever reason. But anyway, either way, it's a great, fun, catchy rock and roll record. She Builds Quick Machines was the single they released, which is a great song. Not my favorite on the record, but a good song, good single to release. Very consistent, one through however many, 14, 15 tracks. It's a long one. But always, every song has a good hook. Every song has a interesting riff, just because Slash makes it so interesting, and all the interesting riffs and the lead runs, you know, and it's not a chugger. You know, it's not a metal chugger, jiggy. So it just feels like Slash has a lot more freedom, a lot of pop rock in a lot of aspects, little disco in there with Slash. Anyway, every song is a good tempo rock and roller with a surprising twist from Slash in the song. But a great rock and roll driving record, you know, something you could put in the CD player, drive through the desert, up tempo. It always keeps a good rock and roll tempo, always interesting, good format, just a good old driving rock and roll record. Really fun record. Libertad by Velvet Revolver.
Okay. Does Velvet Revolver have any connection to Priest?
Oh, yeah, not much. Slash played on We Three Kings from Winter Songs, produced by Roy Z. Now, Slash didn't play on the record. He played on it was a radio station show, KLOS Los Angeles, which is a great historic rock and roll station out of Los Angeles. KLOS had a little shindig in Slash. Played on that, played We Three Kings with Alfred and Jason Bonham was also on that. It's a pretty good little video. It's pretty cool. Scott Weiland dressed up as Rob Halford when he was with STB. and came out and said, "Hey, everyone, I am Judas Priest."
Awesome. That's cool. All right.
Yeah, he had the biker hat on, a whip, you know, leather vest, everything. He's a character. He
reminds me of Homer Simpson when in The Simpsons when he says about Mel Gibson, but he says, "Look at me, I'm Lethal Weapon. Look at me."
Yeah, you're exactly right. Let's see. Slash's favorite Priest album is Screaming for Vengeance, and he says it is still ahead of its time. I disagree with that, but I mean, it's a great album, but definitely not in my top 10 of Priest albums. Slash and Halford, of course, have crossed paths, both legends, both do stuff together, cross paths plenty of time. Guns N' Roses played Power Trip when Priest announced the new record, Invincible Shield. Yeah, that's about it. I'm sure there's a lot more between Slash and Halford as opposed to Scott Whelan and any of the other guys. Yeah. But those are some. So, yeah.
Axl gets a bit of a bad rap, obviously, but he did well playing the contraband songs in the last few years on tour. I thought that was very magnanimous of him, considering, you know, that obviously the separation of the bands and all that sort of stuff. So, and they did a good job at it too.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'll more power to him for actually playing those, you know. It'd be like, you know, if Rob played a Ripper Owens song, which will never happen until the end of time. But that's kind of what it reminds me of.
Yeah. But, the Ripper's still on Twitter and stuff, typing in his name just to see if it has happened.
That guy's something else.
He searches for himself a lot on Google and on Twitter and stuff, and then he finds it and jumps in to the comments to defend himself or whatever it is. A true fan.
Oh yeah, that's a little too much. But still going strong with KK's Priest, and our good friend Future Squash 767 just saw KK's Priest last night. Had some stuff on Twitter, so interesting. All right, Jeff.
Well, you said you had a 13-song album that was really long. Your album is 52 minutes long. 13 songs, 52 minutes, that's not bad. My album is 75 minutes long and 13 songs. That is a long album. It is Dark Passion Play from Nightwish.
Wow.
So it's a little off of my normal track. Nightwish is a symphonic metal band. This is the first album with the second singer, Annette Olsen. She replaced Tarja, who was my introduction to Nightwish. I actually really, really, really enjoy Dark Passion Play. I think it's a brilliant album. And Annette does a really good job. Unfortunately, she was incapable of doing it live. I saw Nightwish twice in this era. Once was in Orlando when I was living here the first time. And Paradise Lost opened up for him. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, wow.
What a hell of a show. Then the second time I saw him was after the next album, and it was on the tour, where Annette got fired mid-tour.
Oh, shit.
And so they played the next date with the backup singers for the opening band. They played with them as the front women. And tried to concentrate more on Marco-centric songs. Marco is the bassist and secondary vocalist, and he is amazing. And then the next night they played, they flew in Floor Jansen from Europe, had her meet, I think she met up with them in Portland or Seattle, and then the next night was in Anaheim when I was living in Southern California, and saw them for that concert. So the second time Floor ever sang for Nightwish was on my was a concert I saw. All that being said, Nightwish is a fantastic band. This album in particular has one of the classic, or actually two classic Nightwish songs, Poet and the Pendulum, which is a 14-minute epic, and 7 Days to the Wolves, which is an absolute burner, 7 minutes, and it is a riff fest. I love that song so much. That is all I have on Nightwish. Not sure if either of you have even heard any albums by them, but... yeah, that's what I got to say on them. The connection to Priest is they played with Priest at Bloodstock in 2018 and at the Monsters of Rock in 2022.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't, I don't know a whole lot about them. I've seen some posts on Metal Twitter and stuff. But yeah, I'm not too familiar with them. I've heard a couple songs here and there, but not too familiar with their story or their catalog at all. So that's interesting.
That's cool.
So... and the reason we did these songs from 2007 that we didn't explain prior is because it's a segment called The Spinner. And I have no voice. I just tried to do it. So one of my favorite podcasts is Get the Fluff Out. And a good friend of mine, Hollywood, although I've never met him, but we call each other good friends. Anyway, he listens to the podcast and he mentioned on his last podcast that I need to do the spinner in a certain way because I have to sound like Rob. Now he's a musician, you know, accomplished guitar player and a singer, has a great voice. So he explained on the last episode of Get the Fluff Out on how I should do it. And I tried a couple times and sorry, Hollywood, it ain't going to happen.
Not for lack of trying, lack of talent.
No, exactly right. So let me swallow my spit for a second here. He wanted me to say, while I spin the wheel, he wanted me to say, spinner, 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 spinner. So that's the best I can do.
Okay.
That was excellent. I was impressed.
Jesus
Christ. I don't even think I'd get to the second spinner before my voice would do that. So.
Mine totally gave out. So that's for you, Hollywood. I'll play my normal spinner song while we're spinning the spinner. So let me hopefully get the right thing here. All right. Sacrifice to vice. What year will suffice for the spinner? Whoa, we're sticking in the 2000s. I thought we may have had this year, but I thought I've erased all of the years that we've had before. 2001.
Okay.
2001 for the spinner. And that rings a bell. Maybe we had 2002.
Yeah.
We'll have to go into the archives. We need Kirsty. She needs to be the official historian of our podcast, too. But... So 2001, our next episode, when we have a guest, because we don't really do it every episode, but next episode we do the spinner, it will be an album from 2001. All right, Punt, hey, this has been friggin' rad. We love having you on, love talking to you on Twitter, and love your new YouTube channel. New YouTube channel, and you have a lot of shit going on Metal Twitter. I mean, you post like, you know, every minute. Do you like sit in the corner and just post stuff like constantly?
Yeah, I've got AI, and that AI unfortunately is me. I have no technical ability on anything, so I just tapping away. Hence the studio, the editing on the YouTube. Every video is done in one take because I don't know how to edit anything.
That's exactly what we do. I try to put an opening song before we start talking and an ending song. Anything in between, hey, we just let it fly. Fuck it, because we have no talent. But where else can people find you, and anything else you wanted to tell our people?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously on Twitter at Punt Road, I think it's capital P-U-N-T, capital R-D, and then the Punt Road Vids, or capital P, capital R, capital V on that as well, on YouTube. Look, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I don't really do anything well very much on there, but if you'd like to, go for it. But I just love it if people subscribe to the YouTube channel and obviously to the Twitter stuff and just get on there and comment. I'd love to hear what people want to hear about and what they want to talk about and interacting. I think that's the best part about Twitter so far, and obviously doing things like this is just hearing what other people have to say and their strange opinions about, you know, like Escape is the greatest song ever written in the history of mankind. No, that's but it's always good to hear what people have to say. I really like it. But I just wanted to say thanks so much to you guys for having me on. I really appreciated the invite when you reached out to me. I do love doing stuff like this. You guys do a great job on here. Very knowledgeable, professional, good fun. I wish
knowledgeable it was a and fun. I'll take professional's bullshit.
Yeah. No, we know you're bullshitting there.
No. I mean, you guys have got this down pat. Like, you know, as I say, you're as professional as me with the no editing. So, and that's it. So, but I really appreciate you guys reaching out. I had a really good time talking to you guys. I love Judas Priest, so therefore I'm always going to love this, really. And, you know, I think we talked before about the metal community and how good it is, and you two are two big proponents of that inclusion and being just really top-friendly blokes that you can have a chat with about anything to do with metal. So I implore and thank you for your great work, and please do more.
Well, thank you.
We definitely will.
That goes mutually, man. You are definitely a leading light in the Twitter community. Definitely have looked up to you for years. I'm very glad to have talked to you. I've learned a lot from you. I've also learned that Escape is not the best Metallica song. But it was always nice. I think one of the first things I saw from you was you promoting Sabbath's Born Again album, and I've loved that album since that. So instant connection.
Instant karma is going to get you.
Yeah.
That's it. Anytime you want to do a you know, Born Again podcast, you know, I'm just coming up.
I'll find a way. Okay, so we'll do a Judas Priest cast about the time that Deep Purple melded with Black Sabbath. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. That's it. And we'll get trash and get some Ford Mustangs and find a racetrack to run around and crash into the little pond in the middle. Sounds like a hell of a time. I already have a head start on both of you.
Yes. We'll call you from the wedding that I'm at later. I'm sure I'll have had a few then. So no driving. Right. No driving.
No. Yeah. We don't promote that. All right. Well, Pun, it's been great. We love having you on. We love talking to you on the Twitter and the YouTube. We'd also like to thank the Deep Dive Podcast Network, Martin Popoff and Rob Halford. And always keep defending the faith and have a ripper, mates.